internet, then you face serious threats to your privacy and constitutional rights. George Orwell 2084 is a show like no other. It's time to fight back. Here he is, David Bowron.
Well, and today we have a special guest. His name is Jeremy Duffy, and he is also known as the Geek Professor. I think he gives out extremely good information. We're going to talk to him and jump right into it. I want to welcome you, first of all, Jeremy, to the show.
Hello.
And it's good to have you. Thanks for taking your time out today to talk to us. And one of the things that we're talking about on this show is identity monitoring. A lot of services out there. Everybody knows who LifeLock is. They advertise constantly. And we're going through some details on whether or not people need to spend the money, because I think it's a lot of money for people to be spending every year. But we're going through and trying to figure out if this is legitimate or not. Should people have these type of services? So we're going through this. We're going to pick it apart. And what I want to ask you, Jeremy, on this subject is, first, let's back up and let's go through some ways that ID thefts occur. How do these thieves do their dirty work, I guess? Can you help us out with that?
Absolutely. I mean, essentially, identity theft is a two-step problem. Get data, use data. So the first thing that thieves do is they find your data in a variety of means. There's lots of different ways. There's classic dumpster diving. There's grabbing data from a physical location if they see it on a counter or they have access to your home, that sort of thing. Most common these days is online access to your data, getting into databases and such, and then using that data to do various things. The vast majority of identity theft being credit-based, some of it not. They can use your identity for medical purposes, for legal purposes, and other things like that, but mostly it's credit. Been a little fast. Do you want to know more about any part of that?
Yeah, no, that's okay. We'll dissect some of that. You mentioned dumpster diving, and that's exactly what it is, right? They go into the trash. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, the thing about trash is that in a lot of cases, and I'm no lawyer, you have to look this up specifically based on your area, but generally speaking, trash is discarded property, and it's anybody's for the taking. The trash man can take it, and so could your neighbor. And they wouldn't even be breaking the law if they did so. So if they want to rummage through your garbage, they can. Now, that's not to say that thieves are going to stop just because it's illegal. The vast majority of security risks in a business or government situation, for example, are the people getting into the large dumpsters where people have thrown stuff away that they shouldn't. Confidential information, manuals that describe exactly which computer systems they have and how they're configured and the default passwords thereof, which far too often system administrators aren't using the good passwords, and so those companies crack wide open just because somebody jumped in the dumpster.
Oh, that's a stumble. And so this is occurring. I mean, obviously, is it true to say then the people that are these thieves, let's call them thieves because that's what they are, the thieves that
Correct.
Dumpster dive, are they, it's two different groups of people. You've got dumpster divers and then you have the people that are sitting behind the computers, or is it some of them are crossing over, they're getting information, then going to the computer and hacking, or are they unsophisticated so they dumpster dive?
I would say that you're talking about a crime that's fairly easy to perpetrate and has rather low risk, all things considered. So it really depends on the situation. For example, if you're going to talk about information risk management, you have to consider who your threat actually is. But that's a lot more detailed than your average person would want to go into. All I would say generically for your average person is that leaving information available in your trash is risky. So if you can mitigate that risk cheaply, and you can, then you should. And then you don't have to worry about it so much. But if you are a high-profile target, if you're somebody that works at a Fortune 500 company, if you're somebody of any influence or power, then you need to pay particular attention to this because you're more likely to be a target.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're, you know, government businesses, enterprises.
You know, CEOs, relatives thereof, people connected to celebrities, that sort of thing. I mean, depending on your particular position, you really have to pay more attention to this, but don't think you're safe because you're not famous or you're not important because you still have a bank account. You're still an easy target.
That's
but generally speaking, the easiest and most common form of gathering of data is through databases online, because that is the easiest and the most profitable. Because I don't have to jump into a dumpster. That's a pain in my butt. I've got things to do on a Saturday. I'd rather run a computer program and go eat some Cheerios. And then when I come back, oh, hey, I've got a couple million people's data instead of jumping into my neighbor's dumpster, and maybe I find an old discarded credit card application that's not very profitable.
Well, and then you just nailed it right there. I mean, that's just it. It's easier. They could just stay at home, you know, to do this. So let's give, for the dumpster diving purposes, and then we'll get in onto the hacking area.
Okay.
Let's give people the solution for that. What would it be? Just shredding the information? Shredding any important information? That's it, right?
Talking about dumpster diving again?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Shredding important documents or otherwise destroying them. I know people that have taken them, put them into the cages under the birds and what have you, or pulped them. That's putting them in a rain bucket and swashing them around like churning butter kind of thing. But let's see. In my case, I just shred them at work because we have more advanced shredders, and that's something that my work has authorized me to do. But otherwise, yeah, open the documents, make sure that they're not containing a lot of important information about you. Another trick that's kind of fun is if somebody sends you a pre-approved, pre-self-stamped envelope to return this application and whatever, you can take the contents of the mail that they sent you, put it into their pre-approved thing, and write void, declined, all over it, and then send it back to them at their cost.
Oh, I like that. That's a good one right there.
And then you don't have to worry about dropping it in the trash at all.
No, that's a lovely
one. And if you're lucky, they'll get the idea and they'll stop sending you that crap.
Exactly, yeah. And they've been so kind and they've sent you the envelope anyway. Might as well use it.
Yep. There are people that will add weight to it with rocks or big washers and what have you, but, you know, use it at your own risk.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Excellent. That's an excellent way. And that, you know, that's an easy solution for the dumpster diving situation.
Are you tired of having to remember all your passwords? Wouldn't it be nice to have all your important files, usernames, and passwords in one secure location? Finally, there's a solution for homes and enterprises. SwissSafe will store and protect all your files and passwords using military-grade encryption. SwissSafe is the preferred online digital vault for Swiss financial institutions such as UBS, Allianz, and AXA Winterthur. Create ultra-strong passwords that you never have to remember again. Send files securely to anyone at any time. Use a patented data inheritance feature for your beneficiaries. For more information, visit MySwissSafe.com. That's MySwissSafe.com.
Let's talk about, let's move on to the next area, which is, you call on your site the Big Haul, hacking, you know, using the internet to perpetrate these crimes and break into the systems and do all the stuff that you're having to do. This is obviously a growing problem, and it doesn't seem like it's going away anytime soon. This problem here has really, really, I'd say in the last few years, I mean, it's granted it's been going on a lot longer, but it's really out there in the news. So the last 3-4 years, it's been almost every single day we're hearing about something. And talking about identity theft, the internet could be a I would call a playground for these criminals. A playground.
Well, it's more like their office, to be honest.
Their office.
The thing that people have to understand is this is not a game. It's not a hobby. It's their business. It's what they do. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about the rise of identity theft, what you're referring to is the shift from where hacking was something that people did for fun or notoriety to where it became their source of income. It's all business now.
Mm-hmm. It's their office then.
Essentially. So you're talking about a crime perpetrated not by just one or two people, but entire groups of people, nation states. It's a source of income and it's a huge business.
It's just amazing. I mean, And who knows how many thousands or tens of thousands of people are doing this for a living, like you said. This is a job.
There's no way to know.
No way to know. And so they know the victim. So go through that. How do they fill in the blanks of the information and how they piece it together? Let's talk about that. Well, how do they do that?
Let's not cross ideas here. So in risk management, you remember that the threat scenario is different for different people. I would say that on the vast majority of cases, the identity thieves, the ones that do this professionally, they don't know the victim and they don't care. They're just looking for best bang for the buck. It's like somebody who sends spam emails. They don't care who receives them. As long as some percentage of people respond to it, they're still making money. They don't give any care who's on the other side. And identity theft is largely the same way. If you have somebody targeting you for identity theft, that's a different issue, though. And the way that you protect yourself is in some cases different, but largely the same. You can really improve your overall defense with a couple of simple things, which I'm sure we'll get into soon. But you have to give it a little more effort if you really are somebody that's going to be targeted. If you are somebody who's at risk from identity theft from people you know, for example, deployed military, very big target.
Deployed military.
Yes. So what happens is people who are deployed have to leave all of their financials in the hands of family members. And if those family members are disreputable or are connected to somebody who is, for instance, your sister's hobo boyfriend or whatever, that person sees an opportunity. And very many crimes are crimes of opportunity. So there are many, many stories of people whose fathers committed identity theft against them, their brothers, their sisters, their relatives who have the access to the information. So basically, in those situations, the key is to prevent access to the information, if at all possible. Don't let the opportunity arise.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's hard to trust, you know, because you can't know if your sister then has a new boyfriend, you don't know him. And if your sister, you know, you want to keep your information tight. You want to keep it secure. And if it's loose, what you're saying is you stand to lose. Somebody could take it. Somebody could use it against you. And it could be somebody in your own family. Sadly.
Which is why if you have to leave for a long time, maybe keeping documents locked up in your house is a good plan. Or now, because the internet is so ubiquitous, even for military in many cases, they can do a lot of things online that they would normally have had to give power of attorney for in the past.
Yeah, that it's obviously an issue. So friends and family, and then once they get this, they then use your personal data. Do they create fake IDs, fake checks? I mean, what do they do sometimes?
I don't really. For the most part, it's not necessary to create a fake ID unless you're perpetrating certain kinds of identity theft. For example, if you are, I mean, go back down to the base. What is it you're trying to do? If you're trying to get a job but not use your name, you need fake identity, you need fake ID, you're going to need a fake social security number, those kinds of things. If you're trying to apply for a passport, access to things. You need to get to things that require an identity. If you want to go into a secure environment, you need a fake ID. But these are movie scenarios, things you see in people jumping through buildings from helicopters kinds of things. It's not that common. So what you're more likely going to see is somebody who just opens a credit account in your name, who wants a credit card, a line of credit, because these are all things that ID is not even required. All that's required is your information.
Right.
It's way easier crime to perpetrate and more financially viable in a shorter period of time.
You know, I mean, what you just said is amazing. And it, if you are to put a figure, you know, we're not going to guess at figures, it's impossible to do this. But as a growing trend, you mentioned it, it's an easy crime. So it's obviously anything that's easy is going to grow. So do you think, I mean, looking into the future here, do you think it's getting worse before it gets better? I mean, where do you see this crime wave heading?
I think of it entirely from a psychological perspective. If it's profitable for people to do it, that's what they're going to do. People will follow the reward structure that works for them. It's true of really everybody, and the only thing that ever stops anybody is morality. And the thieves have their own morality that says it's right to take these things for myself because these other people deserve it, or they won't miss it, or the insurance will cover it, or maybe they just literally do not care, and they're only thinking of themselves. It's whatever their motivations are, the end result is that they are able to work the system to their benefit because the system allows them to.
Scary stuff. And we're talking to Jeremy Duffy. He's known as the Geek Professor. He is a somebody that has over 20 years experience, including 10 years with the Department of Defense, protecting government and military computing from nation-state adversaries. And he's got some experience here. He knows what he's talking about. And one of the things we want to segue into now is solutions to this issue here of identity theft, and if we should use credit monitoring, theft insurance, whatever people want to call it out there. How in the world do we protect ourselves? Because people don't know. They don't know. They just they're using the internet. They go onto their computer. They let's assume they know how to go ahead and just shred their important documents before they put it in the trash. So they've taken care of that problem. But we're just talking to people use the computer, not like we do, but they're just using it just occasionally. Maybe an email to their grandkids. They're retired or whatnot. What do they do? I mean, do they go out there and buy these expensive services? I noticed that if you put in LifeLock sucks, your website comes up second to theirs. And that's
actually the first one. The first one you're seeing is an advertisement. The first non-advertisement link on a Google search term for LifeLock sucks is my website. And I'm actually very proud of that.
You should be. I would be too. So now you know how to get to Jeremy's website. Just type in LifeLock sucks and you will get to it. So when you're there, there's a wealth of information. But let's talk about LifeLock since we're on the subject here. Let me just come out and say, I am not a fan. I don't beat around the bush on this show. I am not a fan of LifeLock. I personally used it years ago, about 3-4 years ago, on purpose. I wanted to waste my money for a year. Basically, that's what I did. And I wanted to see exactly how they treated me, what they did. And I was shocked. I mean, they talk about on their site, before we get into the nitty-gritty here, they talk about on their site, choose a plan that's right for you. And then when you do choose that plan that's right for you, and I choose the standard $9.99 a month plan, that's not good enough. Every single week, every few days, I'm getting emails bombarded that what I have isn't good enough and that I need to upgrade to the Advantage plan. Okay? And then when you upgrade to the Advantage plan, they bombard you again and try to get you to upgrade to the Ultimate Plus. Drove me crazy. But I was doing this so that in the future I could do a show like this.
I did not know they did that.
Well, that's their whole thing, is to upgrade you, is to upsell you, is the term, to the highest price plan, which is the Ultimate Plus plan at $29.99 a month. Isn't that fantastic? And the real scary, the scary thing is you're giving them these. You don't know them. Okay, let's just say you're giving them your bank information so they can monitor that for you. You're giving them your 401k information so they can monitor that for you. That is scary to me. You know what? I don't want people looking into my bank account. I don't want anybody looking into my bank account. I'm going to be in control of my own bank account because it is my own bank account. You know, so, and they have millions of people. So let's talk about this. Obviously, you don't like them either, so we could agree here. And let's just talk about LifeLock for a second and talk about the reasons you don't like them. So, a matter of fact, on your website, you have a little a video here, and it says credit monitoring is a ripoff. And a very, very good video. I'd recommend people watch that. It's, what, a couple minutes long or something. But
you can search it on Google. It should come up one of the first links, yeah, just by that title. I don't have a simple name for my YouTube channel yet. You have to have certain conditions before you can do that. But searching for it's very easy. They're sort of stick figure animated. To make it as simple as possible, and there's
Absolutely.
One for each of the major topics, including three things everyone should know about data breaches. Again, you can find that by title, and that's the first video in the series that refers specifically to the OPM data breach, which is related to your topic about giving companies like LifeLock.
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Well, it's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. You'll find a whole host of shows and a lineup of great content back at AmericaOutloud.com.
Shredding is what you do to protect your physical information, but your online information, there's only one protection, just one. Don't give it to them. That is the only way you can protect it, because huge companies are losing data left and right. Facebook's been hacked, LinkedIn's been hacked, pretty sure. I'm careful not to throw out names when I don't have my computer to check in front of me, but the OPM, obviously, that was a huge problem, because you're talking about only a couple, 14, 20 million people affected only, but this information included psychological evaluations, drug test results, deeply personal information about those 14 million, 20 million people. And the only way to protect it is to keep it away from them entirely, because you can't count on these companies to use proper protections, especially in the government where they have such ridiculous bureaucracy. The OPM in particular had the Inspector General warn them multiple times over years that their security was insufficient before somebody finally noticed and took advantage of it. And that's one of the most important lessons I want to teach people. Hackers aren't smart. We're stupid. And I don't mean we as in you.
I understand.
You're not doing anything wrong. You're just a person using the computer. It should work flawlessly with no effort from you. You shouldn't have to know so much about computers. That's the reason I do what I do. It makes me mad that people have to be experts just to be safe. I don't like that. And that's why I try to teach people what they need to know to close that gap. And so every time you go to a website, try not to give them information. I'll give you a perfect example, something that's useful for you and your listeners. You're familiar with PayPal?
Yes.
Okay, I use PayPal. It's a good service, and it's hard to not use it because there's a lot of reasons you would. But
sure.
One of the things that makes me nervous about PayPal is they have your bank account number. And if they've got my bank account number, then what's to prevent them or anyone that works for them or anyone who hacks them from accessing my bank account and draining those funds?
That's right.
So here's what I've found out. And the reason I found it out is because I'm a pain in the ass about it. Pardon my language. You need to always ask them, why do you need this? How can I get around that? What are the other options? And because I asked that question, I learned from PayPal employees that what you can do when you set up your account is they will send you two test deposits of 10, 15 cents, 30 cents to your account. It's a code, basically. So if you match the two amounts that they send to your account, then they can confirm it's your account, and then they can pull money from it if you want to pay that way, which I never want to do. Hopefully we'll talk about credit cards and why those are better later. But for the short term, what I did is when they put the test deposits in my account, I responded, not at all. I didn't give them any information. I didn't even react to it. What happens is they will still be able to deposit money into your account, but they will be completely unable to pull money from it. So it creates a one-way payment system with PayPal.
I like that right there. That is a great, great tip. And the other thing, because I'm in total agreement with you, I do not like I mentioned, people, or in PayPal in this case, going into my account. Now, what I did, because I do have PayPal through our work, through business, and I set up a whole separate account for that the money in there is there's not much money in there at all. But I typically have it come out of the credit card, and that's what you recommended people do.
Correct.
If they do that. But I mean, you just fund your account, you know, and keep it funded, and then you don't have that issue. But that's a great tip, Jeremy, not to respond. It's fantastic. So, and by the way, you mentioned OPM. That's Office of Personnel Management, correct? And it was like
oh, yes, sorry.
Million. No, that's okay.
Been working for the government too long.
Yeah, no, I knew what you were talking about, but for the purpose of our listeners. And I remember reading about that breach and studying it and talking about it with many, many people. And one thing stood out is the theft of some of the biometric passwords, fingerprints that they stole. And I thought, because everybody's talking about, oh, we need biometrics. Well, guess what? They have your fingerprints, and you can't change those. And they
Correct.
Got them. And I don't know how many they received out of there. That wasn't clear to me, but I know that they had some. That was a definite. And people were mortified that they had their fingerprints. That is a scary thing. For
yep.
sure.
So basically, before we get back to LifeLock, which is one of my favorite subjects, I wanted to cover this idea of keeping information out of databases because it's
Please.
Such a critical, important yeah. thing. The only way to trust the information is if they don't have it. It's why I have a fake persona that I use where legal and ethical to do so. There's my disclaimer.
Sure.
I use a fake name, fake social, fake phone number, fake everything in cases where I can, because if there's no legitimate, valuable reason for me to give up real information, I won't.
Mm-hmm.
And if you develop that philosophy, you will be much safer off. For instance, I recently moved to Texas, and in Texas, because of politics, when you get a state driver's license, they take your thumbprints, which I have a huge problem with because I'm not a criminal. And to me, mm-hmm. fingerprints are used in criminal investigations only. They
yes.
should never be used for security or authentication without some very specific safeguards that I don't want to talk about here that would get crazy. But I actually have an entire seminar briefing about biometric authentication methods and passwords, which is not really popular because it's not a super interesting topic to most people, but
right.
yes, fingerprints are a problem. They're easy to steal, easy to fake, and not easy to secure. And
mm-hmm.
Like you said, once you lose them, you've only got 10 fingers.
Mm-hmm.
I can change passwords for the rest of my life.
If you can't change your fingerprints. And we'll definitely, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because we'll have future shows on biometrics, because a lot of companies are going to that, what I'm noticing. And we'll talk about that. So we'll have you back on when we discuss that, if that's okay with you.
Sure thing.
But getting back to LifeLock and the credit monitoring deal, why do you believe it's a ripoff? Let's just go right into it. Talk about this.
Well, first I need to make a small correction. There's three major forms of identity theft protection. If I could do air quotes
sure.
over the phone, I would. The fraud alert is the first, and it's totally bogus. My videos explain why. Credit monitoring is another, also bogus, and I can explain why in my videos. But LifeLock is actually a third. It's not credit monitoring unless they've changed their service to include that. It's identity theft insurance. So
yes.
the whole idea of the $1 million guarantee is that it's an insurance plan, and they have a series of supposed protections and things that they do to help keep you safe, and then if those fail, supposedly, you can get up to $1 million to help restore your good name, etc. The reason that I don't like the company is because they are based in fraud, and I'm allowed to say that because they lost a class action lawsuit
yes,
that said
did.
Essentially that.
That's
false
right.
advertising. But by that time, they were so rich, nobody cared. They basically
yeah.
shrugged it off as a business expense.
It was a $67 million lawsuit, I believe. It was right around $60 million they
right.
lost.
That's huge. It didn't matter. They were making more than that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, their business plan was solid. They basically mm-hmm. scare people into paying them money and do nothing with it. So I'm not familiar with what LifeLock is doing now, so I will speak to what I know. And when they first came out, and you can read this on my website point for point, they have a list of six supposed protections that they do that are all essentially BS. Things like, we keep a list of all of your credit card companies' phone numbers so that when something bad happens and if you lose your access to those numbers, we'll give you the numbers so you can call them. They don't even do it for you. They don't negotiate for you. They will give you a list of phone numbers that you could find on the internet. The amount of bull crap is so high, it drove me crazy. It put me into such a rage that people were getting taken advantage of this way in what was a barely legal and, in some cases, illegal operation that's still standing today, and that people don't know that they're getting ripped off. It drove me to distraction. That's the reason I built the website. That's the reason I have such good search ranking on that term. It's the reason that I actually put a Google alert on their name for a while, so every time somebody mentioned LifeLock on the internet, like magic, I would appear to contradict them. It was a little bit of a crusade at the time, but
yeah, it sounds like it, and a good one.
I just satisfy myself by making the best effort I can to educate people that these services really are about selling false peace of mind. They want you to feel better, and they will charge you through the limb for it. And I think if you're going to buy these services, it's only because you've evaluated what they do and determined that they actually help. And so far, I've not found one that does.
I haven't either. I have not either. So, I mean, if people are looking for, some type of something that they could do to protect themselves, and they've watched your video and they're like, okay, I definitely don't need to do LifeLock. I understand that. Let's talk about what they can do to maybe stop or at least solve identity theft for them. How about locking credit reports, credit freezes?
All right. See, this is the good news is that you can do something about it, and it's not hard, and it's not expensive. And the answer is to lock your credit reports with what's called a credit freeze. Don't let people confuse you. A freeze and a fraud alert are not the same thing. A fraud alert is worthless. A freeze isn't. And the way the freeze works is that you connect with the credit reporting company, the three major ones, and I would do that by doing a Google search, a search engine of your choice search for credit security freeze, and then just look through the results and look for the first link for each major company that says Experian, TransUnion, Equifax in the URL and says freeze, because they'll make it hard to find on their website, in my experience.
Yes,
so I'll just go through a search engine and find it that way. You follow the directions. You'll have to pay a small fee depending on the state you live in and depending on whether or not you're a prior identity theft victim, because if you're a prior identity theft victim, you should have free freezes.
It's no free.
For any any state.
It's no fee.
If not, worst case scenario, it's a one-time cost. No, you shouldn't have to pay again. Again, this depends on state laws, but at least for 7 years and most cases for life.
Correct.
And what happens is this flags your account to where they are no longer able to sell or share your credit information with anybody at all. It essentially removes you as one of their data points. Because what most people don't realize is the vast majority of identity theft is caused by the weak system that was put in place by these credit reporting companies, where their goal is to sell your information to as many people as possible, because that's how they make money.
That's exactly right.
So
right.
Putting a credit freeze in place blocks that. And they don't like it, which is why, and this is very, very brief history, they fought for years in every state to prevent credit freeze laws from being passed, until eventually the laws were finally passed in essentially every state. And I think right now it's 47 or 48 states have credit freeze laws now, and in the remaining two, they're still optional now. The credit reporting companies voluntarily provide them now. But the idea is that if you block the credit check, you block the identity theft. Because the vast majority of the time, somebody's going to go get a car in your name or a credit card at Macy's, and that requires a credit check. And if the credit check comes back denied, well, then you can't be robbed.
You can't be robbed.
Very, very simple and effective system that costs you nothing.
Nothing.
Other than the one-time fee. And the only other situation is where you actually do need to apply for credit. And, for instance, you are getting a new job, you are getting a cell phone, and you've determined that you can't get around it because you should be a pain in the butt like me and challenge them, and I always do. But if you can't get around it and you have to do the credit check, you go back to the credit reporting company's websites and you do what's called a thaw. You don't remove the freeze, you thaw it. And what a thaw does is it creates a temporary window of time during which the anybody can get to your credit. So you are exposed, but for a very short period of time. And that time is of your choosing.
Okay, nice. So
and you will have to pay for that. Again, if you're not an identity theft victim, and depending on your state. But again, it's a one-time fee for the thaw. In the 9 years mm-hmm. that I've had my credit accounts frozen, I've unlocked mine probably 3 times, maybe 4.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
My wife's never. I've never had to unlock her credit reports.
Well, and that's just it. It's not like we're running around buying homes and cars and getting new jobs every month or every year even, right? Years go by.
Exactly, yeah.
We don't need to do that. So that is fantastic advice. Matter of fact, you mentioned doing the searches. For those listening right now, you won't have to. I've already done it for you. And at the end of this call, we're going to go ahead and give you the numbers, each one of them, to freeze, how to freeze, the number to freeze your credit report for each the three, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. So we're going to give you that information. Jeremy, this is valuable. This is valuable information. And, you know, I hope that we've saved listeners a lot of money by running off and subscribing to LifeLock and others. There's other companies out there that are selling theft insurance now, too. They're copycats, and it doesn't work. Any closing thoughts that you want to put out there, Jeremy, for our listeners before we wrap up the call?
Yeah, the only other one is that people confuse identity theft and credit card fraud a lot. And so it's important that they realize they're not the same thing. Somebody who is able to get your credit card number and use your credit card number of an existing credit account is not committing identity theft, they're committing fraud. And the reason that that's important is because the credit freeze won't help with that. But it's okay because there's history of this too, which I won't get into, but the point is there's a federal law that protects consumers against credit card fraud, which is why you want to use credit cards to shield your purchases, especially when you go online, and generally avoid debit cards or cash cards or any other payment system, because the credit card has federal protection. So if somebody were to get your credit card number and charge against it, you're not responsible for any of the unauthorized charges on that. It's called, I can't remember which law it is. I think it's the Fair Credit Report. No, that's not it. I'd have to look it up. I apologize.
Right, okay.
But the point is it's worth looking into.
Absolutely. And by the way, I wanted to tell you this is pretty funny. While you were talking there, I wanted to make sure I got this in. When people do a search for you, I just went to my favorite browser, DuckDuckGo, and I typed in LifeLock Socks, and you're number one there too, pal, so you're doing something.
Hey, all right.
So just so you know, so if you want to find out Jeremy Duffy, the geek professor, please go and type in simply LifeLock Socks into the browser that we recommend for people is DuckDuckGo. Type that in, and you'll see him. He's first right there. It populates, and he is first. We really appreciate you, Jeremy. Valuable information that you've given today, and appreciate your time. And like I said, we're going to have you back on, talk about biometrics and the new wave that companies are going, trend, I should say, that they're soon to be adding a biometric. So we're going to talk about all that in the near future, and we'll have you back on. So we appreciate you.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Today you face serious threats to your freedoms, such as data collection and weak security by using free email accounts, unwarranted surveillance, and cyber crimes. Ransomware, malware, and a host of other viruses are constantly attacking. Privacy of your online data is freedom. For pennies on the dollar, you can prepare now before it's too late. You too can use the same strength of protection that even Swiss banks are using. Begin today and start regaining your online privacy. Solutions for homes and businesses are found by visiting privacyabroad.com.
Well, I think it's pretty clear after spending the time we have with our guest that these services like LifeLock and any credit theft or ID theft service is not worth it. It's interesting how these identity services such as LifeLock operate, really. But it's a free country, and they could, if they want to, I guess it's free enough to make false claims to rope consumers into believing in giving them a false sense of security. But they have memberships, and this is the way they work, and I want to go over this with you. I mentioned them in the call in the interview earlier, but this is the way their memberships work. They tell you to select a plan that's right for you, and then they constantly try to upgrade your subscription by claiming the service that you bought doesn't do enough to protect you. And I know this firsthand because I've subscribed to it. I created only people like me, I may do stuff like this, maybe, I don't know, but I created a dummy bank account. It was a real bank account, but it was a dummy one in a sense that I didn't use it to pay my bills. I didn't use it to put deposits in it other than what I put in for LifeLock purposes. So I was doing a case study is what I was doing. And I set up my account, gave it to him, because you know what? I don't give my bank account information to people that I don't know, and that's including LifeLock, okay? So I joined as a standard member. That was $9.99 a month, but that wasn't good enough. Within a few days, I received an email convincing me to upgrade to the Advantage. And I said, that's interesting. So I'm going to go. Hey, they're worse than door-to-door vacuum cleaner salesmen. No offense, you vacuum cleaner salesmen out there. But this is, I don't know what else to describe. This is a horrible, horrific thing what they're doing. So they then upgrade you, okay? And then that's not good enough. So, and I did this. I upgraded to see what they do. I upgraded to the Advantage. This is $19.99 a month. Now, what this does, this gives you bank and credit card activity alerts and alerts on crimes in your name. Okay? Well, and it's $100,000 in stolen funds reimbursement with their little disclaimers, of course. The first one was only $25,000, you know. So this one is $100,000, but they have now access to your bank account. That is a scary thing, very scary, to give somebody. You don't know, and you know what? You don't know. They have, hundreds, if not thousands of employees? You don't know when they're just going to say, you know what? I work here. They'll never know, but, you know. I'm going to take something from these people. You know, that, we don't know that this when this can occur. Any case, that's the Advantage plan. But that wasn't good enough. They then tried to upgrade me to the Ultimate Plus, which is for people that have a higher net worth, or they'll monitor all three credit scores for you, which you could do on your own, and that have investments in 401k programs. This is, I'm just reading off their site. This is what it says. And this is the one that provides the, I called it premium earlier, it's Ultimate. I was wrong. It's a stolen funds reimbursement of $1 million, okay? So I didn't fall for that one. I didn't upgrade to that one. But any case, I believe these services, they encourage laziness by giving consumers a false sense of security. Well, I have identity theft, so I can do what I want to do. And that is not the case. You have to be vigilant in making sure that your credit and your bank accounts and any account that you have, you keep an eye on it. It's yours. You do it. The consumer that buys these, they don't think they need to make common sense or take common sense measurements to protect themselves from an ID breach. Well, I've got it covered. I'm paying my $9.99 a month. I'm paying my $19 a month or whatever. But here, you know, credit agencies will freeze your credit until you need to have it accessed. So it's not the case. You need to take the precautions. And we're going to go through a lot of some of the state laws and security freezes, how they work. And I'm going to give you the information, the fees to freeze, the numbers to call and all that. Looked all that up for you. And it's not good, obviously, to give your bank account to anybody. So just remember that point. So here's the state laws and some of the security freezes. Most have laws requiring credit reporting agencies, aka credit bureaus, to allow security freezes on your credit report. There's 9 states out there Alabama, Alaska, Georgia, Iowa, Michigan, Missouri, Ohio, and Virginia that don't have such laws. So for those states, all three credit bureaus voluntarily allow consumers to freeze their credit reports. Bottom line, it doesn't matter what state you live in, you could freeze your credit report. And the freeze, and this is in most states, the freeze remains in effect until you remove it or thaw it out. Like our guest today, the geek professor, went into thawing your credit report out. It gives you enough time to pull it, buy the car that you need, open a bank account that you need, and so forth. Okay? In a few states, though, the freeze expires after 7 years. Check with your state. Okay? The state that you're in, check and see if that applies to you in your state, but typically they will remain effect until you remove it. Fees to freeze your credit are between $5 and $10 to freeze. And then you could temporarily lift the freeze, like I mentioned, remove the freeze, thaw it. And then if you become a victim of identity theft, well, if you're currently in that state right now and you're a victim, there's no fee to freeze your credit report. Okay? So you obviously get with your agencies right away and freeze that credit, obviously. And some states will even waive the fees for seniors over a certain age. All right, so you just have to contact each bureau. And here's how to do that, okay? If you're driving, don't write it down. But if you're at home, you're listening, you could write these numbers down. These are the numbers that you need to call to freeze your credit. I highly recommend everybody doing this, everybody in your family to do this. It's not going to hurt. Like I said, when you need your credit, you thaw it out. You call them, tell them you want to thaw your credit, reopen it. So it's not a permanent thing. Okay, here's the numbers. Equifax. This is the number to freeze your Equifax credit report. 1-800-685-1111. That's 1-800-685-1111. If you are in New York with Equifax, you will need to call a different number. That's 1-800-349-9960. That's for Equifax. Experian. Freeze your Experian credit report. You call this number, 1-888-397-3742. And then for TransUnion, to perform a freeze on your credit report, it's 888-909-8872. Do it. Call these bureaus, call these agencies, and have your credit froze to protect yourself. That is really all you need to do, because guess what? When you do that, nobody could steal your identity. Now, they could, and this happened to me one time. Wasn't ID theft, but I checked into a hotel in Macon, Georgia. It was a Holiday Inn in Macon, Georgia. Never forget this. Checked in, checked out the next day. It was one night. Left. The very next day, I had charges to my credit card and an airline ticket on Lufthansa to Europe somewhere. Right? And I'm like, okay. All right, where did I use my card? Well, I went to Macaroni Grill. You know, I knew where I went. I had the receipts. I went to this hotel, and I figured it out. It had to be that hotel, because at the Macaroni Grill, I paid cash. So it was the only place I used it. It was a gas station, at the pay at the pump, and a Holiday Inn. Can you protect yourself from something like that? Not really. But typically today, your credit cards are calling you right away. Hey, did you make this purchase? And so there's some protection in that. Definitely use, in my family, we use the same credit card. Okay, one credit card is what we have. My wife has the same card. It's just obviously in her name. And that way it's a lot easier to keep track of purchases and budget in your household, but it is also easier to detect any type of crimes that could occur. Only use one credit card is a good tip. Keeps things very, very simple as well. But in any case, that did happen. And it does happen. Those are the things that it's just the culture that we live in right now. It's unfortunate that people will steal from you. They will, absolutely, if they don't steal your lawnmower, they'll steal your credit card. But it's just the way it is, and we have to do what we can do to protect ourselves. You know, shy of just not using a credit card, what can we do? you know, really. So be vigilant out there with your stuff. Use common sense, okay? Make sure when you're buying something online, you're buying it from a reputable company that is in good standing. That's very, very important that you know who they are. Very, very important as well. So I hope you've enjoyed the show. Look forward to having you back next week.